Song of Solomon, the title literally means the most exquisite song. And it is a poetic book. For those of you that read it, you know that. And definitely for many people, it's hard to understand. It's hard to understand perhaps what its purpose is here in Scripture. Now, usually the reason why it's hard to understand, or for those that it's hard to understand, it's because we tend to want to look beyond the obvious. And many times we attempt to read in some sort of deeper meaning and deeper interpretation than what is given. Because we have a hard time looking at this and just accepting it for what it is. Now, certainly there are truths, as there is in a lot of Scripture, that's revealed in the fact that it lays beyond the surface. It's kind of a layer down. But in fact, this is a book of romance, a book of poetry. It's telling a story. Many people are uncomfortable with such a topic as this being found in Scripture. But it has its place in practical life expression, just like anything else. And I think that God ordained it was to be in here. Certainly the reason I'm sure it was ordained was because it is believed to be written by Solomon. So they accepted it into the canonized text. The story begins with a Shulamite woman. A woman who the king very much wanted to marry, or at least have romance with, to bed her as a concubine. Yet it appears that this woman in the story was in love with someone else, with a common shepherd boy, of whom she was separated from by this king, who longed to have her for his own. So let's begin. Now here again, as I said, the story begins with this Shulamite woman, and she begins to speak here about this shepherd boy whom she has a passion for. And it begins the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. Because of thy savor of the good ointments, thy name is as ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. Now she is telling us here that love is better than wine. Now this is no doubt speaking about the emotional and physical aspects of love, that intoxicating effect of the feelings that she has towards this shepherd. And apparently, by verse 3 here, she's not the only woman that finds the shepherd attractive. She goes on, draw me. We will run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in thee. We will remember thy love more than wine. The upright love thee. So as I said, apparently the Shulamite woman has been added to the king's harem, apparently from the text that's before us, against her will. And she would apparently rather be with this shepherd boy, and she speaks of her desired rescue by him. Now, this woman that we're speaking of here, the Shulamite woman, was no soft city girl. She's a woman of the fields. And she begins now to speak of the fact she was deeply tanned by the sun as she worked in the vineyards that her family owned. She says in verse 5, I am black, but comely, O you daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon. Look not upon me because I am black, because the sun hath looked upon me. My mother's children were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but mine own vineyard have I not kept. So again now, she's going to start thinking here, as we go on, about this shepherd boy that she loves, and where she would obviously rather be at that moment. Verse 7, tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, where thou markest the flock at rest at noon, for why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? If thou know not, O thou fairest among women, go thy way forth by the steps of thy flock, and feed thy kids beside the shepherd's tents. Now the king begins to speak. I've compared thee, O my love, to a companion of horses in Pharaoh's chariots. Thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels, thy neck with chains of gold. We will make thee borders of gold with studs of silver. So now the king begins to romance this young Shulamite. And he's really given a lot of real flowery speech here, which is obviously designed to flatter her, to bend to his will and to his passion. It goes on. Verse 12. Oh, her thoughts, excuse me, verse 12. While the king sitteth at his table, my spikenard sendeth forth the smell thereof. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night between my breasts. My beloved is unto me as a cluster of camphire in the vineyards of En-Gedi. So now her thoughts, she's saying even in the king's presence, was for her only true love. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes. Behold, thou art fair, my beloved, yea, pleasant. Also our bed is green. The beams of our house are cedar, and our rafters are fir. So now the king is continuing here in his attempts to woo this young woman. And she answers back. She says, I'm the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. Now this is a way that she is telling the king that she is in fact only a common woman, the same as many others. And you, if you know about the rose of Sharon, the lily of the valley, it's very common in that part of the country. She's saying, I'm nothing special. Now she's trying, understand the scenario that's going on here. She's trying to counter this king who's trying to woo her into his bed. As the lily among the thorns, so is my love among the daughters. Now obviously the king counters with even more description of her rare beauty, saying that she is like none other, telling her that she indeed stands out as an exceptional beauty. As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Stay me with flagons, comfort me with apples, for I am sick of love. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. See, in her mind, she's saying that the jewel is not her, but the jewel is the man that she loves. And she's saying that she's lovesick. And so she's not mentally with the king, but rather she's with her shepherd that she believes to be her true love. Going on, verse 7. I charge you, O you daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up, nor awake my love till he please. Now this, she'll mention the same verse several times, and this is her way, apparently. Apparently she doesn't like the king's overtures here. And she also doesn't like what apparently is encouragement from her friends to take advantage of the situation. They're probably telling her what a lucky person she is, how blessed she is to be able to have the attention of such an important person. Certainly there would be many people who would feel that she was in a blessed position, having a king of all the land at her hand. And she's saying she's not one of them. This is her way in verse 7 of telling her friends to back off. She goes on. The voice of my beloved, behold, he cometh leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a roe or a young hart. Behold, he standeth behind our wall. He looketh forth at the windows, showing himself through the lattice. My beloved spoke and said unto me, Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land. The fig tree putteth forth her green figs, and the vines with her tender grape giveth a good smell. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, thou art in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the stairs. Let me see thy countenance. Let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. Again, she's saying she only has a heart and eyes for the one that she loves. And she's remembering here about a visit when he came to see her. When she was out working in the fields, we take up in verse 15, it says, Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. Now, either this event or the dream of this event was snapped here as she remembers how her brothers kind of crashed this rendezvous as she's working in the fields, commanding her to go back to work to chase the foxes out of the fields that were destroying the vines. My beloved is mine and I am his. He feedeth among the lilies. Until the daybreak, until the shadows flee away, turn my beloved and be thou like a roe or a young hart upon the mountains of Bether. She's consoled here by the fact that it makes no difference because no one was going to ultimately separate her from the one she loved. And so she's telling him to return later that night until the daybreak and the shadows flee away so they could pick up where they left off. And now this young woman here in chapter 3 begins to recount what could possibly be a dream. We don't know for sure. In which she's searching for the one that she loved through the streets of the city, and she begins to ask around for if anyone has seen him. By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. I will rise now and go about the city and the streets, and in the broad ways I will seek him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. The watchmen that go about the city found me, to whom I said, saw ye him whom my soul loveth? It was but a little that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house, into the chamber of her that conceived me. She goes on in verse 5, I charge you, O you daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up, nor awake my love till he please. So again, she's reiterating to those that are around her that she has no interest in any other than the one that she loves, which is that shepherd boy. Who is this that cometh out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all powders of the merchant? So now she's brought back once again to kind of a reality of her situation, being a forced concubine to the king of the land. Verse 7, behold his bed, which is Solomon's. 70 valiant men are about it, of the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man hath his sword upon his thigh because of fear in the night. King Solomon made himself a chariot of the wood of Lebanon. He made the pillars thereof of silver, the bottom thereof of gold, the covering of it of purple, the midst thereof being paved with love for the daughters of Jerusalem. Go forth, O ye daughters of Zion, and behold King Solomon with the crown wherewith his mother crowned him in the day of his espousals, in the day of his gladness of his heart. So this Shunammite woman is acknowledging the fact that the king has power, that he has position, that he has status here. She knows what she's up against. She knows who she's dealing with. Chapter 4 says, behold, thou art fair, my love, as Solomon now returns to his flattery. Behold, thou art fair, thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Mount Gilead. Thy teeth are like a flock of sheep that are even shorn, which came up from the washing, whereof every one bare twins, and none is barren among them. Thy lips are like thread of scarlet, thy speech is comely, thy temples are like a piece of pomegranate within thy locks. Thy neck is like the tower of David buildeth for an armory, whereon there hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men. Thy two breasts are like 2 young roes that are twins, which feed among the lilies. So now he's just going to town here, isn't he? Until the day break and the shadows flee away, I will get me to a mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. Thou art all fair, my love, there is no spot in thee. So still undeterred in verse 6 and 7 here, this woman can only think of her escape to get back to her lover, despite what the king is telling her here, okay? Verse 8 says, come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, with me from Lebanon. Look from the top of Amana, from the top of Shinir and Hermon, from the lion's dens and from the mountains of the leopards. Now see, her thoughts here again are the words of the one she loves. This would be the shepherd boy's words. And now she's imagining him, or maybe he actually did, but she's probably just imagining him calling her away from that situation and into his arms. Thou hast ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse, he's saying. Thou hast ravished my heart with one of thine eyes, with one chain of thy neck. How fair is thy love, my sister, my spouse. How much better is thy love than wine, and the smell of thine ointments than all spices. Thy lips, O my spouse, drop as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue. And the smell of thy garments is like the smell of Lebanon. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Thy plants are an orchard of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, camphire with spikenard, spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon with all the trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes with all the chief spices, a fountain of garden, a well of living water and streams from Lebanon. Awake, O north wind, and come thou south, blow upon my garden, that the spices thereof may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden and eat his pleasant fruits. Now he goes on in here in chapter 5. Too much reading for me tonight. Now again, this could be a reminiscing, a past event, possibly a dream. And so this woman is remembering a time when he and her were together. I am coming to my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends, drink, yea, drink abundantly, O beloved. I sleep, but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, open to me, my sister, my love. My dove, my undefiled, for my head is filled with dew and my locks with the drops of the night. So she's remembering or dreaming, perhaps, about a time where he came to her door at night. And she goes on now, verse 3. I put off my coat, she answers back. How shall I put it on? I've washed my feet. How shall I defile them? So she was encouraged to let him in, but she was already ready for bed, so she resisted. But now once that he's gone, she wishes, as she would later hear, that she had let him in. And so she went out looking for him. Verse 4. My beloved put in his hand by the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him. How do you like that? You know you're sweeping them off your feet when I say that. By the way, for those of the uninitiated in Scripture, bowels talks about the inward parts of you, okay? Not the common sense that we think today. I rose up to open to, maybe you guys have dated someone like that, I rose up to open to my beloved, and my hands dropped with myrrh, and my fingers with sweet-smelling myrrh upon the handles of the lock. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself, and he was gone. My soul failed when he spoke. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave no answer. So now she goes out to find him. The watchmen that went about the city found me, and they smote me, and they wounded me. Keepers of the walls took away my veil from me. So the city watchmen apparently had found her alone out there at night, which was not done at that time, and apparently either mistook her intentions or roughed her up a bit just because they were able to do so, but it was not a good night out on the town. I charge you, verse 8, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him that I am sick of love, or I'm still sick in love. So she's calling her friends now to help her make up for what is now lover's regret. She turned him away that night. She wanted her friends, if you run into him, to tell him, if you see him, that I still love him. Sorry that I didn't let him in that night. Verse 9. What is thy beloved more than another beloved, O thou fairest among women? What is thy beloved more than another beloved that thou dost so charge us? And these are the words of her friends. See, her friends don't understand why she would pass up the love of a king for that of a humble shepherd boy that in the world's eyes was nobody. Verse 10. My beloved, she describes him now, my beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000. So now she begins to tell them why she loves this young man. That and despite the fact that he in this world is nobody, he still to her is like one in 10,000. He's truly like none others. She's a one-man woman. His head, verse 11, is as the most fine gold. His locks are bushy and black as a raven. His eyes are as the eyes of dove by the rivers of water, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are as a bed of spices, as sweet flowers. His lips like lilies, dropping sweet-smelling myrrh. His hands are as gold rings set with the beryl. His belly is as bright ivory overlaid with sapphires. Whew, that's really out there. His legs are as pillars of marble, set upon sockets of fine gold. His countenance is as Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. Ladies, if you ever really want to woo your man, this is... underline these passages. His mouth is most sweet. Yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. So she's describing him here. And in all seriousness, if there's anything that I take great joy of in this story, it's in that last sentence. This is my beloved, and this is my friend. And if you're truly in love with someone that you consider your friend, you're blessed. Okay? Because my wife's my best friend. Chapter 6. Whether is thy beloved gone, O thou fairest among women, whether is thy beloved turned aside that we may seek him with thee? So now is her friends now, after this big speech she gave here, feels her her heart towards this young man and asks where they should go look for him. And she answers back, my beloved has gone down into his garden, to the beds of spices, to feed in the gardens and to gather lilies. I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. He feedeth among the lilies. So now she answers that he's gone down to the garden and that's where they should look for him. Now, the king's staying in the game here. Now he pulls out all the stops here and he just continues to cover her with praise and compliments. Thou art beautiful, O my love, as Tirzah, comely as Jerusalem, terrible as an army with banners. Turn away thine eyes from me, for thou have overcome me. Thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Gilead. Thy teeth are as a flock of sheep which go up from washing, whereof everyone beareth twins, and there is not one barren among them. As a piece of pomegranates are thy temples within thy locks. There are 80 queens and 80 concubines and virgins without number. Now here he's confessing. I got all these other women. I don't know what he's thinking here. My dove, my undefiled is but one. Yeah, so far. She is the only one of her mother. She is the choice of one of her that bare her. Thy daughter saw her and blessed her. Yea, the queens and the concubines, and they praised her. Who is she that looketh forth as the morning, fair as the morning, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners? So now, this woman's going to deflect the king's overtures once again. She says in verse 11, I went down into the garden of nuts to see. Been to the garden of nuts? That's got to be somewhere here in Menominee, doesn't it? I'm sorry. I went down to the garden of nuts to see the fruits of the valley and to see whether the vine flourished and the pomegranates budded. Or ever I was aware, my soul made me like the chariots of Amminadab. Return, return, O Shulamite, return, return, that we may look upon thee. What will you see in the Shulamite, as it were the company of two armies? Now what she's doing here, basically, again, this is very poetic, but what's happening here is she's offering an explanation of how she came to be there with him at that time. And she's saying that it was just merely a chance meeting. She's saying there's nothing divine or supernatural about it. She didn't have, didn't go out seeking his admiration. She was just minding her own business when the king saw her. Chapter 7, how beautiful are thy feet with shoes, O prince's daughter. And again, the king counters, and he's going for it now here. The joints of thy thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of a cunning workman. Thy navel is like a round goblet, which wanteth not liquor. Thy belly is like a heap of wheat, set about with lilies. Thy two breasts are like two young roes that are twins. Thy neck is as a tower of ivory, thine eyes like the fish pools in Heshbon, by the gate of Bath Ribbon. Thy nose is like the tower of Lebanon, which looketh toward Damascus. Obviously, the compliments of the time wouldn't play well today. Thine head upon thee is like Carmel, and the hair of thine head like purple. The king is held in the galleries. How fair and how pleasant art thou, O love, for delights. This thy stature is like to a palm tree, and thy breast to clusters of grapes. I said, I will go up to the palm tree, I'll take hold of the boughs thereof. Now also thy breast shall be like clusters of the vine, and the smell of thy nose like apples. Now he's going here, isn't he? And the roof of thy mouth like the best wine for my beloved that goeth down sweetly, causing the lips of those that are asleep to speak. Now maybe some of you ladies have had guys try to woo you this way. Certainly not with this kind of speech, but we got our own kind of stuff today, don't we? Verse 10, I am my beloved's, and his desire is towards me. She's unmoved. Okay? She's going to stand strong in her love. She's going to stand strong against this flattery. Verse 11, come, my beloved, let us go forth into the field. Let us lodge in the villages. So now her heart and her body still belongs to her lover. She can only think about the time she's going to be with him again. Come, let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine flourish, whether the tender grape appear and the pomegranates bud forth. There will I give thee my loves. The mandrakes give a smell, and our gates are all manner of pleasant fruits, new and old, which I have laid up for thee, O my beloved. Chapter 8. O that thou wert as my brother, that sucked the breasts of my mother. When I should find thee without, I would kiss thee, yea, I should not be despised. And what she's telling us here is that she loves this shepherd boy to such a degree that she would wish him to be her own brother, if nothing else. Could then at least she could be with him, and it would not be a problem. She's willing to sacrifice anything as long as she's able to be with him. She said, I'd rather have him be my own brother. At least I could be with him than to not be able to be with him at all. I would lead thee and bring thee into my mother's house, whom would instruct me. I would cause thee to drink of spiced wine of the juice of my pomegranate. His left hand should be under my head, and his right hand should embrace me. Now again, she rejects any encouragement and counsel that would steer her towards the king. She reiterates in verse 4, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, that you stir not up, nor awake my love until he please. Verse 5. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? Now, verse 5 on here, she's imagining herself back home again where she belongs. Out of the situation that she's in, back home with the only man that she's going to ever really be in love with. I raised thee up under the apple tree where thy mother brought thee forth, where she brought thee forth that bare thee. Set me as a seal upon thine heart, as a seal upon thine arm. For love is strong as death, jealousy is cruel as the grave. Thy coals thereof are coals of fire, which has a most vehement flame. Many waters cannot quench love, nor can thy floods drown it. If a man would give all the substance of his house for love, it would utterly be contemned. She's wanting out. She's wanting to get out of that situation. Understand that at this time, a lot of kings, and apparently Solomon was one that was often in the same situation. He had hundreds of wives. He had hundreds of concubines. Often at that time, a king would find some woman, force her, you know, and it's all sounds so royal and so wonderful, but it's not. Basically, he spies some woman, wants to sleep with her, forces her by king's decree to come home that night. He sleeps with her. She becomes one of his concubines, but quite honestly, he may never sleep with her again. I mean, he has hundreds. Solomon certainly did. And it's really nothing but a one-night stand. And then once he has taken this virgin and taken away her virginity, the whole world knows this. She's not able then to go back out into society in order to have a relationship, get married, have a normal family life because of this situation. So she then spends the rest of her life kind of locked away in these parts of the castle, parts of the royal household that was set aside for the concubines, and that was it. Life was over, all for the one-night stand. Now, certainly we can laugh and we can look at all this stuff, but let me tell you something, if we can get anything out of this, it's certainly that oftentimes that we can think these kind of things. It's that going out and having a sexual fling one night, that it will, you know, it's innocent, it's not going to be a big deal, but it does. It affects your life for the rest of your life. That's what she wants. She wants out of this situation, and she's in love with somebody else, and she's being forced into this situation. Verse 8 says, "We have a little sister, and she hath no breasts. What shall we do for our sister in the day when she shall be spoken for? If she be a wall, we will build upon her a palace of silver. And if she be a door, we will enclose her with the boards of cedar." What's happening here in these last two verses? Basically, she's remembering the care that her brothers had for her, the plans they had for her when that day would come where she found the right man to marry. But she also understood that it was her brother's desire to protect her, to preserve her pure before marriage, and that they would intervene if she was not going to be pure. So catch this last verse. It says, if she be a wall. In other words, if she stands strong against premarital sex, if she stands strong, we'll build her a palace of silver. But if she be a door, if you catch the drift, we'll enclose her with the boards of cedar. Parents, underline that. Put her in a big cage. Now, I'm sure there was a lesson in here somewhere. I'm not sure what it is. But we covered the Book of Solomon. Come back next week and we'll get into some Isaiah, okay? Let's pray.